Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet. Yes, always the most happening place on the planet is Prashantinilayam, be it summer or winter, be it rainy or dry, be it January or December or May or November. Because Prashantinilayam always, always pulsates with the inscrutable love of Bhagwan. And yesterday, May 6th, 2015 was so special. It was the day when the worldwide Sai family paid its respects to the one who was so blessed, so privileged, so pious, that out of the millions in this era, the Lord chose her womb to set his foot on the earth in a human form. And it was indeed such an intense day, a day when we could express our gratitude to the mother, to our heart's content, for gifting us our beloved Baba. In the morning there was a bhajan session at the parents' samadhi in Puttaparthi. And while this was going on, the samadhi of the divine parents were offered flowers and garlanded. To be sitting at the samadhi of the parents in the morning under the sky, it felt so sublime. This area is so beautiful. You have not only the parents' samadhi, you also have alongside a beautiful bewitching statue of Lord Krishna. And if you go further inside, you have the temple of Lord Dattatreya. And the area is so quiet, the ambience so peaceful, so spacious and so sublime, with sage-like coconut trees and lovely breeze. The Lord definitely has chosen such a lovely abode for the divine parents. A place where we can fill ourselves with peace as we contemplate on the Lord and His blessed earthly mother. In fact, just to give you a feel of this beautiful place, this beautiful space in this holy hamlet, on the Radio Sai website, we have a photo gallery with pictures of the samadhi just taken just 2 days ago. So that is how the Ishwarama day started. And after bhajans at the samadhi, there were bhajans in the Prashantinilayam Mandir, where again mother was remembered as the bhajans went on, because these were bhajans where Bhagwan is extolled as Ishwaramba Nandana, as Ishwaramba Sutta, and so on. And in the evening there was a beautiful program in the Sai Kulwant Hall, a program which brought alive the life and the beautiful relationship of the mother and the divine son. It started with offering gratitude to the mother through a beautiful couplet.
Janam diya tune sai ko, hum pe kiya upkaar. Janam diya tune sai ko, hum pe kiya upkaar. Ishwar Amba tera sai, Ishwar Amba tera sai, yug yug ka avatar, yug yug ka avatar. Janam diya tune sai ko, hum पे किया उपकार।
By gifting us our beloved Bhagwan, O Mother, you have made our lives so beautiful. From time to time, when divinity decides to manifest, it chooses the medium. And in this era, the Lord Himself said that He was indeed lucky to find you, the perfect medium through which He can concretize Himself in flesh and blood and be amongst His devotees. So this is how the program began in the Sai Kulwant Hall on May 6, 2015. You can watch the entire program on Radio Sai website. It's about an hour. And in this program, we had recalls of yesteryear devotees like Mrs. Vijay Kumari, the author of the book, famous book, Anyatha Sharanam Nasti. We had Dr. Mrs. Jayalakshmi Gopinath, the former warden and the principal of the Anandpur campus, sharing about what she has witnessed of this intimate relationship between mother and Bhagwan. You had recall of Mrs. Vasumati Devi again, who came to Bhagwan in the 60s and who had the opportunity of being blessed by Bhagwan thanks to the concern of the mother. And we also had an audio clip from a conversation with Miss Rani Jawa, where she shared how it was the mother who asked Bhagwan for the first college that was set up in Anandpur.
In 1968, when Swami went to Africa, he had left Amma at a house in Bombay. So that was a time where I got a chance to speak to Swami on the phone, because he called his mother from there. And actually she was not sending him, because Swami had curly hair. So she was very scared, you know, that Africans also have curly hair, Swami's dark, you know, he'll get lost. So she wanted my father to go. And Swami said, no, no, who will take care of you in India? Let Indubai come with me and let Jawa stay here, and you stay in Jawa's house. So she stayed with us. And that time she saw we are five sisters and one brother. Then she realized that, you know, girls should be educated. And she decided that the Anandpur College had to come in. So the first thing she asked Swami at the airport when Swami came back, she told him, I want a promise from you that girls should be educated. So she saw that, you know, all of us were being educated and all that, and it's a difference having education background. So she told Swami, we don't have any college here in our place, so the girls must be educated. Mm-hmm. And she has been my backbone, actually. When she was staying in the house, she really taught me a lot of things. We had a translator. One of our workers was a Telugu person, and he used to translate everything. So when Swami came, first promise he gave his mother that, yes, I will put up a college in Anandpur. And he gave the job to my father to see for the land and everything. And then that's how the Anandpur College came.
So it is the mother who made this request to Swami to first start the college for the woman in Anandpur. Not many know the story. Bhagwan later, in many discourses, has mentioned how it is the mother who was the inspiration behind all the trailblazing social development projects of Bhagwan, be it the drinking water project, be it the university, be it the hospitals. And the mission that began half a century ago It acquired a channel with the setting up of the Sri Satisai Central Trust in 1972. And the work of the trust, which started in 70s, continues and actually multiplies. And we in Radio Sai thought that in this year of Bhagwan's 90th birthday, it would be good to capture how the mission that Bhagwan started with the setting up of the Central Trust in 1972, how is all these projects, how are they going on? What is inspiring the people at the helm of affairs to take Bhagwan's mission forward? How is it for them now? Because earlier they were only executing the direct instructions from Bhagwan. How are they deciding what has to be done? And what is now, in their view, the vision of the Sri Satisai Central Trust? And what are the new initiatives that we are going to see in this year, significant year of his 90th birthday? We wanted to get answers for these questions and share this with the worldwide Sai family. And that is what prompted us to request Mr. K. Chakravarti, one of the trustees of the Sri Satisai Central Trust, to speak to us, and he very kindly agreed just before Aradhana Day. In fact, just 2 days before April 24th, 2015. And what I'm going to do now is play for you the first part of this 70-minute conversation. So that is what you'll be listening in the next 45 minutes or so in this last segment of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:48, and as I just mentioned, we will now listen to the conversation with Mr. K. Chakravarti. He first shares about how it was for him when April 2011 happened, how he reconciled with the trauma, and then he goes on to share what helped him to collect himself and then gather his energies and inspiration and continue to work for Bhagwan's mission, even though he is now in his 80s. He came to Bhagwan way back in 1980. Swami appointed him as the first registrar of Sri Satisai Institute of Higher Learning in 1981 when he unfurled the university. Prior to this, Mr. K. Chakravarti was the collector of the Anantapur district. And he had had a very distinguished career being an IAS officer. He belongs to the Indian Administrative Service cadre. And after his 14 years of service as the registrar of the university, Bhagwan gave him the opportunity to then become the secretary of the Sri Satisai Central Trust, and this is the position in which he executed all the missions of Bhagwan, taking his instructions directly till Bhagwan was present with us in his physical form. And later he continued to discharge this responsibility now as a trustee along with other distinguished devotees whom Bhagwan appointed as trustees. So in this conversation, he begins by first going down the memory lane and sharing about how he reconciled with April 2011. And then he talks about the vision of the Central Trust. And then he dwells individually on different missions, on the education mission, the healthcare mission, and the new initiatives coming up. So today we will listen, as I mentioned, to the first about his reminiscences of April 2011, and then about the vision of Central Trust as he sees it, and then about Bhagwan's education mission. So here it is. Mr. K. Chakravarti in the studios of Radio Sai on April 22nd, 2015.
Saram, dear sir, and greetings and a warm welcome to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you.
It's an honor to have you again in the studios.
Thank you.
In a couple of days from today, we will be observing the Aradhana Day 2015. And I would like to ask you, when you reflect on April 2011 and now, what thoughts flood your mind? How has this journey been from April 24, 2011 till now? Perhaps it's a journey you thought you'll never ever make in your life.
I'm not the only one who had this feeling that a time will come when we'll have to be alone. When I say alone, that is to say physically apart from Swami. So those were the dark days, April 2011, when Swami was in the hospital and when the Maha Samadhi took place. It was a very difficult time, not only for me, but for the countless devotees of Swami. But for one who had been with him physically for nearly 30 years in Prashanti Nilayam, and having had the blessing of being with him most of the days, both morning and evening, it was a very difficult thing to overcome great sense of void. And you have been accustomed not only to seeing him, but to receiving instructions from him, and to place our daily activities before him, and then seek further guidance from him. It was a part of our life. So when I did not have that any longer, it was quite a difficult experience to go through. And it took quite considerable time before I could ever pull myself up to face the situation that had arisen. But slowly, since we've also heard from Swami as to how we should carry on with the work entrusted to us, and especially if it happens to be the work entrusted by Swami himself regarding his own mission, there is no alternative but to really pull oneself up and to face the difficulties, whatever they may be, and to carry on work in as normal a way as possible. It took quite a while, as I said, to regain a sense of being back in the active world. No doubt that the few weeks or even months that followed Mahasamadhi gave a sense of being, there is a disconnect as it were, you know, with the external world so far as it was concerned. But then it required great efforts to shake off that feeling. When you are accustomed to having God by yourself, by your side, nothing really seemed difficult. But in his absence, physical absence, it called for a great effort to draw from your inner strength, and never having envisaged a day that I would be in this world beyond Swami's sojourn on earth made it very difficult for me. I'm sure this feeling must have been shared by many, many. But as functionaries of his trust and his organization, we knew that we had to get into an action mode. We had to bring ourselves to deal with the daily matters of the trust and the organization. Of course, long years of closely working with Bhagwan's institutions, most of us knew what was expected of us by him. And in a way, I suppose, even if it was not a formal training, it was a very quiet absorption of the values and systems which Swami had put in position. So, well, on the one hand, we were aware of what we should be doing. We also required a great sense of determination on our part to draw that eternal spirit of Swami that is within us. We cannot seek Swami as a physical reality outside. It has to be drawn as the eternal spirit within me and within all of us. So the first few months, in fact, made me withdraw to some extent from the day-to-day functioning. But soon thereafter, I came to understand, to realize that the best way to do justice to Swami's mission is to get back and get seriously engaged in all the activities of the trust and the organization.
I remember the last time you were on Radio Sai, you mentioned that this is a great loss, but this loss is paradoxical because it is a loss which only propels you to do more.
Yes, because after the initial shock, you know that you have to invoke his presence within. And we have heard him during many discourses that this body is like a water bubble. But when it happened to the divine body itself, it was a shock that no amount of having listened to his discourses could lessen. So then I realized, you cannot mentally cognize this. You have to spiritually draw sustenance from the universal spirit that he is and that each one of us embodies in himself. And that is the conclusion, not, as I said, mentally cognized, but deep within me, felt and understood, that I have to really remember the teachings of Swami and find not only solace, but also regain the confidence in myself to continue to engage myself in the multifarious duties and functions of the trust and the organization.
As you mentioned that many times you'll have to call on the inner reserves of spiritual strength that Swami has suffused us within, and it calls for a lot of determination. May I ask you, in your moments of low, there are times when you perhaps would look at Swami and almost break down. Swami, why did you leave me here? How is it that, you know, you just expected me to carry on with all this and you are not there here? In those moments, are there certain interactions with Swami or certain scenes that you have witnessed personally or certain directions that he has given you which sort of become your eternal sources of inspiration, which helps you to collect your energies and get back into his work?
More than conversations with him. It is these discourses in which, over more than four decades which I had the blessings to listen to, that really gave the strength. You know, in one of the discourses Swami said, when Krishna was no longer there, how Pandavas felt absolutely lifeless as it were. And it is one thing to hear in a discourse, it's yet another to experience that feeling of void and that utter helplessness when Swami was no longer with us. So we knew at that time that these are eternally played on the world scene by Bhagwan from age to age. And here he was, unlike other avatars, created institutions which need to be looked after, at least so far as we are concerned, what we consider to be for all time to come. We can't put a time limit. This is something which has to go on. And I'm sure with his will, successive generations of people who are going to be associated with these institutions will certainly have the wisdom and also the capacity to carry on that these great institutions.
One other thing I wanted to ask is, when some of us reflect on the events preceding April 2011, for many of us, it was not even in the realm of possible outcomes, what happened. And I think it was like that for so many. But I remember you saying that you too were in that position, even though you were seeing the heartbreaking condition, what was happening in the hospital, you always wanted to allow that margin of mystery, because it is the avatar. But, and at that time, later when you think, sometimes it seems that, after all, it was not all that abrupt. Perhaps it was in some ways pre-planned. Maybe there were those signs and signals. Maybe we did not see them. Maybe we did not really realize them coming. Do you get such a feeling?
I think personally many of us didn't want even to reckon with that possibility. Therefore, even if it surfaced in your mind, you had a knack of pushing it out. Because, firstly, it is something which we cannot possibly live with at that time under the stress that was building up. But also, as you said, you cannot rule out the possibility of anything which is beyond our normal understanding that can happen. It is not merely our understanding of that latent capacity in God, which is not very visible to us, but even in a very close, personal, physical way, it was something which most of us felt, that for the sake of the devotee's prayer, Swami would again like to come back and be amidst us. Even when he was ill and there was a progressive enfeeblement, Swami would come down and say that he would like to go and give darshan. We know, and we knew at the time, that it was not possible for Swami to make that going around amidst the devotees. But the response usually was that the devotees will be disappointed if I don't go out for darshan. And more than that, I think there was a joy in him that came because he was giving joy to so many. So his own physical condition was something which was pushed into the background. When Swami comes out and his face is lighted, as it were, when you see the bright faces of so many devotees. So that gave us an indication that what is important is that spirit of Swami to do till the last whatever needs to be done for the sake of devotees. And if we are today doing work regarding his institutions, it must be the same feeling that must imbue us, that we're doing something which will give Swami the joy that he had when he saw his own devotees. So we are trying to look after these institutions as though they are visible embodiments of Swami today, and that their well-being is the equivalent of the joy of Swami at that time.
Wonderful. And as you mentioned, now your role is slightly different, because earlier you had Bhagwan who gave you instructions in the execution of various missions. But now you are suddenly in a position where, along with a few other distinguished elders, you have to drive the trust. You will have to take decisions. How has this role been?
Honestly, I cannot say that I or my colleagues are doing it. At an external level, yes, we have to do that. But more and more, the feeling comes that it is Swami who is providing the energy, and more important than that is the capacity to use our judgment to be in line with the directions he gave when he was with us. I mean, it will sound pompous if I say, well, we are not the doer, Swami is the doer. It is not at an intellectual level that we understand this teaching, that give up the feeling of doership. But having been with him in practical day-to-day working, the feeling even then was that we are not doing it. It is Swami's work. He's getting it done through us. And I think there is a continuity of that feeling now, that it is he who is doing, and we seem to be continuing to do the same thing as we were doing, except for the fact, as I said, that physically we are not able to feel him.
So only the physical presence is not there, but the cosmic presence is there and he's guiding.
Yeah, I think because of long training of having done something even then, as his command that has been carried out, his will that has been exercised, his desire and his wish to be fulfilled, I think people who have been accustomed to doing that continue to have that feeling, as I said, even if he is not physically with us. It is, of course, as you said, it's a spiritual dimension normally, but in our case, possibly it is a continuation of a habit that has been ingrained in us.
In some way, Swami has prepared all of us for this in his own inimitable way.
That's what I said. It is the feeling not given to one. It is a feeling given to all of us here. Whatever the task that we have entrusted to us, all of us feel that physically we are carrying it out. But the driving spirit is not the fading energy within, but it is the all-pervasive energy all around us.
And the Central Trust continues to be engaged in all the multifarious activities, and in fact it has only increased in the last 3-4 years. Personally, when you look at all the activities of the Trust and the way Bhagwan was guiding the Trust right from 1972, what do you think is the vision of this institution?
There are two aspects. One is the institutional aspect. The other is the organizational aspect. Institutions like these super speciality hospitals, the general hospitals, the mobile hospitals, university, schools, and these are set up by him in order to show to the world in practical terms the concretization of the ideal. If Swami felt that will be an ideal situation to give free health service to the poor and needy, these super speciality hospitals and other hospitals became the models, and they now represent as expressions of not only his will, but also of the possibility of doing these things by any well-meaning philanthropist. When he set up the hospitals, he said, I'm not setting it up as God incarnate. I'm setting it up to show that this is a doable model. Anyone who has the will to do service, selfless service to society, can set up an institution of this nature. Therefore, we still have to wait and see how this message will get translated in the years to come. Similarly, when the university was set up also, he said, there are so many universities, why is it that I have to set up this university? And all of us are familiar with what he said, what is the object of the university, etc. So it is this part of the institutional setup and its image as representing the selfless service of Swami. That is at the heart of these institutions, and that has to be really taken note of. Similarly, the drinking water supply project. It is not as though it is the resources that are lacking. I mean, government has enormous resources at its disposal. And there are organizations perhaps which also have enormous resources at its disposal. It is the will to do and the commitment. And I think the spirit of doing things which are felt deeply by the people, especially poor people, as not having been provided for in their life. So there is a great felt need. And when Swami says that you see me in all, he made them see him in themselves by doing this work. It is not the lack of material resources that has stood in the way of implementing these things by other people. It is that great power of love that expressed itself in terms of this service that perhaps was not there. That's why even material resources and human resources cannot be a substitute for that deep divine love.
And in that sense, the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust as a non-governmental organization is very different.
Yes, one of the things which Swami had said, you need to set up these institutions and these, is to say that we have to be doing, we should be doing what we can. And the Swami's plans, if you have seen, are all plans which he was very sure that through this central trust, of which he was the founder trustee and the sole trustee, wanted to do. So there's no question of depending on resources outside of this trust which he presided over. So whatever he wanted to do was well within the resources of the trust. As I said, if others have not done it, it is not because of material resources. It is that divine commitment, if you can call it, yes, to serve his own people. And the people in the world are his people. He is not confined to one region, one state, one country. All the people are his people. And because geographically he was located, he was doing here. But otherwise, whatever work is done, even by our own international organization elsewhere, are all expressions of his will that is being carried out by the devotees all over the world.
Yes. I mean, the reason I ask this is a recent report said that there are nearly 20 lakh non-governmental organizations in India. It's almost one non-governmental organization per 600 people. You have a proliferation of such organizations. But as you mentioned, what will always make the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust unique is this spirit of universal love, is this spirit of Swami.
And I think undertake such work as are capable of being attended to through the institution. A non-governmental organization also has become governmental organization because it depends on government's aid and assistance. So to be truly a non-governmental organization, it has to really find resources within its own organization and only undertake such work as is possible to be met from the resources that have been made available to them. So in that regard, the Central Trust today would like to do such work as are capable of being attended to within its own resources.
And as you mentioned, even though the divine manifestation may be limited to a few decades, but the institutions which embody His Spirit will last for centuries. And as you mentioned, the university is one such. And you are someone who was involved with the university for very long, as a registrar for nearly 15 years, right from the start of the university. You have seen it grow. In your view, what is the strength of this university? How do you see it going forward in the coming years? Which is that unique value proposition of this university which will take it forward in the years to come?
The purpose in setting up the university was to enable students, both boys and girls, to secure a good education. A good education is one which not only enables the students to learn the subjects in the best manner possible from qualified teachers, but it is also a process of refining oneself. After all, the purpose of education is to refine oneself. And that is possible not only by studying the subjects, but also understanding the destiny of each one of us in this world. According to Swami, education is incomplete if we study only the formal subjects. It becomes complete only when you also understand the spirit that we are and the education that goes in understanding of it. So it is called, for short term, a spiritual education. But a spiritual education is not only, is not just imparted. It is absorbed and it is practiced, because it goes beyond the cognitive senses. Now, it is a question of at least asking ourselves the question, which are not going to be easily answered. Each one has to find it for himself or herself. But Swami said, what is the point in educating yourself in all the secular subjects without understanding who you are? So you have gone to great lengths and heights to know the outside world, but you have not moved one inch within. So it is not, the territory within is vastly unexplored. So when you explore the outer world through your knowledge of subjects, you also have to give enough time to understand who you are, who is making efforts to understand the outside world. So the world within is also a world to be explored, understood. So for shorthand, we call it as a spiritual education. Value education is to be considered in that context of being able to understand who we are, what is the purpose of our life, what is the destiny of man. And that's why Swami said, this institute would give you scope not only for understanding and becoming proficient in your subjects, but through your stay here, you will also have opportunities of reflecting upon deeper issues of who you are. This value education which Swami has given the institute is basically a theistic architecture. Swami said that you start with this firm conviction that God is, and then around that you try to understand the relationship of man to God, of man to nature, of man to other fellow human beings. And there is no God other than oneself. The more we understand ourselves, the nearer we come to God. And these are things which Swami had spoken to us through many discourses. And in conventional universities, there is no scope for reflection on all these vital matters. We are very much carried away by the knowledge of the outside world. But the knowledge of the world within is not considered to be within the scope of a university. It is considered to be something which is the domain of a personal life. Whereas here, Swami provides opportunities for boys and girls to go through a process of education which constantly reminds them that while you pursue your subjects, you also try and understand yourself. And I think value education, therefore, is not merely restricted to ordinary virtues like being honest, being punctual, of things of nature. But it is something beyond that. And the spiritual content of the value education is a very important factor, which I think in an organized way is given only in Swami's institute. Because Swami said that your secular education is one half. You need a spiritual education in order to make it a whole circle. So there is a purpose behind this value education. It is not only to be a good citizen of a country, to be a good member in a community or society, but to be yourself in the widest sense of being a cosmic being.
And I think, as Bhagwan used to many times say, and what we saw, that in some ways Swami has replicated the Gurukula system of education, where you have a lot of teachers who stay in the hostel. You have 1 in 3 teachers in the university who stay in the hostel. And if you see the teacher-student ratio, here it is 8:1, where the national average is 33:1. So I think all these factors, as you mentioned, contribute towards strengthening this aspect of the university.
It is true. The favorable teacher-student ratio is one part of it. The stay of some of the teachers in the hostel also gives ample opportunities for the students to interact with the teachers. And the teachers' lives themselves there become something to be emulated by the students. The practical way in which the teachers conduct themselves, worthy of being, let us say, occasionally appreciated by Swami, all that are conducive to making teachers as role models for the students. Value education is not taught. It is what we as individual students see and get inspired. If you see a teacher who is just living the way in which we think the highest principles must be followed, I think there's no need for him to talk to us about value education. He is himself the moving embodiment of a life well lived in accordance with the highest principles. So that's why the role of the teachers who spend time in the hostel becomes very important.
At the same time, we see that the university in no way has not lived up to the standards in terms of its academic performance, because you have the NAC accreditation committee.
Yeah, I think from the beginning, the idea was that there should be academic rigor. That is why you started the institute with the holding of entrance exam, because the students come from different parts of the country and there are different state boards and the central board of studies from which students come. And in order to enable them to really enter the university, the institute wanted a selection process. This is about nearly 35 years back, when many of the universities, because are run by states, they're all within the state. Of course, these government the central government institutions have this nationwide selection procedure, common entrance test and things like that. So from the beginning, the idea was that if students come from different parts of the country, it would be better to have an entrance test and then sort of see how what is the quality of students. And I think over these years, the selection procedure has really enabled the selection of students who are able to acquit themselves well during the rigorous educational processes, which they go for 3 years or 5 years or beyond. So the emphasis is always on maintaining the academic rigor of the institutions. In the early days, the boards of studies and the academic council consisted of very well-known academicians from the Indian Institute of Science, the Indian Institute of Technology, and some very well-known leading universities. The idea was to have their experience in their profession and to see how best they can give us guidance in evolving syllabus which will be on par with their own courses, and to ensure that it is on par with the best national institutes. So the academic rigor was always very much in the institutes working. Along with this spiritual education, it was meant to really turn out students who will have a certain completeness about them when they finish their education here. Education is a lifelong process, a continuing one, and more so in the spiritual domain. At least we can stop learning mathematics and physics after we leave the university. But we can't say that we have learnt all that in the spiritual education, because what is learnt here is only the beginning, the foundation for a life which has to be lived in accordance with the principles of such value-based education.
And it's heartening that the academic rigor has in some ways paid off, because today the university, according to the new methodology adopted by NAC in evaluating universities, it stands as the top 10 universities in India.
Yes, I think it has done well, but it must continue to do well and also perhaps improve upon. Now, one of the things that will be implemented shortly is the establishment of a research center. See, the emphasis has been in the early part on undergraduate education and then the postgraduate education. Although we had initiated research studies, research programs, even from the very beginning, it requires now at this stage of its growth an impetus on the research side. In fact, 2008 itself, Swami said that it is necessary to set up a research center for the institute. And somehow it had not materialized. One of the reasons why Swami wanted to have a research center is to see that some of the bright research scholars who would like to continue to stay, if there are opportunities for their postdoctoral fellowship, etc., are not able to do so because of the lack of such facility. The research center will have to really concentrate on areas in which the university seems to have gained some recognition. So I think the present university administration will take all steps to ensure that the research center which is coming up really fulfills the needs of the university and also the larger needs of the country as a whole. We have to wait and see. But then the research center, because Swami wanted it to be really brought into existence by the central trust. So the building is being put up for more than 7-8 crores, and the first phase of the equipment, etc., would perhaps cost more than 20 crores. All these things will be now met by the central trust.
And if you see also in the university, there has been a 53% increase in the research students in the last 3 years. There is a lot more students getting into research.
See, the idea should be that all those who enter the course, because it's a small university, who enter these courses must be in a position to go, you know, to the highest of academic achievements. Good if those people who enter the BCom honors or the BSc honors or the BA honors are able to continue their postgraduate and beyond that to do research. And especially in the fields of science, it will be good if all of these people are in a position to continue in their respective areas, higher research work in this university.
And what is also very heartening is you see in the recent past collaboration between the university and the hospital in research work. In 2012, you had the chondrocyte cell culture laboratory opened in the hospital, and there is a lot of research happening in diabetic retinopathy, in regenerative medicine, in tissue engineering. So you have the Department of Biosciences, Department of Chemistry working with the departments in the hospital. That is something very...
It's a welcome move, and I think the super specialty hospitals and the university will continue this type of, you know, interaction and map out areas where they can jointly do further research. It will be a good thing.
You see that the visiting professors who used to come to the university when Bhagwan's physical presence was there, that has also continued. Even today you have nearly 126 visiting professors coming from different corporates, from different disciplines, and teaching and, you know, almost staying for a semester and giving their time and experience.
True. I mean, one of the things that had been the feature of this university was the availability of good academicians from both within the country and from overseas. And the tradition is continuing. And I think students have the benefit of the knowledge and the expertise of people working in their areas from within the country and from abroad. It's a good tradition to be maintained, to be continued.
And just like the university now is recognized as among the top 10 in India, you have the...
So that was the first part of the conversation with Mr. K. Chakravarti, trustee, Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. And in the conversation that follows, which will bring you in future episodes of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, Mr. Chakravarti goes on to share about his impressions about the healthcare mission. And one very important project of the Central Trust is the new building that has come up next to the administrative block, which will house all of Bhagwan's images, audio, video archives, and it is built with utmost scientific precision so that these treasures of Bhagwan, his discourses, his visuals, his handwritten letters are preserved for thousands of years. So this building is going to be inaugurated by His Grace during Guru Purnima this year. And there is on the plan 2-3 institutes that will come up which will study Bhagwan's literature. There is a lot of academic research as well as spiritual research, research on Bhagwan's literature, that is envisaged. And when you listen to the future part of this conversation, the second part, you will get more details about what are the plans of the Central Trust in not only these missions of education, healthcare and water, as well as you'll also listen to the plans in terms of disseminating Swami's message, which is now a very important part of the mission and the activities of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. It's very heartening that the mission goes on. And the mission goes on with so much of vigor. The mission goes on with so much of enthusiasm. I'm reminded of the poem by Rabindranath Tagore, where the mind is without fear and the head is held high, where knowledge is free, where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where the words come out from the depth of truth, where tireless striving stretches its arms towards perfection, where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way into the dreary desert sand of dead habit, where the mind is led forward by thee into ever widening thought and action, into that heaven of freedom, my Father, let my country awake. This is what Bhagwan was inculcating. This is what Bhagwan wants every student of not only his university but everyone to go into this heaven of freedom. Today is the birthday of Rabindranath Tagore. He is the first Indian to win the Nobel Prize in Literature. He is the composer of the country's national anthem. The Prime Minister of the country, Mr. Narendra Modi, today said, Gurudevji's prose and poetry have influenced generations. He represents the best of modern and ancient Indian intellectual thought. Gurudev Tagore blended the wisdom of India's past with the promise of its future through his literature, art and music. The Prime Minister also said that Gurudev Tagore taught us the power of free thinking while inspiring us to dream of a heaven of freedom. As I mentioned, a heaven of freedom where the mind is without fear and the head can be held high. And one of the classic works of Sri Rabindranath Tagore is Gitanjali. The translation of this original poems in Bengali. In English, it was viewed as spiritual and mercurial. It was highly influential in introducing the best of Indian culture to the West. And among the various poems in Gitanjali, there is one that captures me. There is one that is so beautiful. And I'm sharing this because I feel this is a prayer which will help us reach our goal. The prayer is on purity and it goes like this. Life of my life, I shall ever try to keep my body pure, knowing that thy living touch is upon all my limbs. Life of my life, I shall ever try to keep all untruth out from my thoughts, knowing that thou art that truth which has kindled the light of reason in my mind. I shall ever try to drive all evils away from my heart and keep my love in flower, knowing that thou hast thy seat in the innermost shrine of my heart. And it shall be my endeavor to reveal thee in my actions, knowing it is thy power which gives me strength to act. Life of my life, I shall ever try to keep my body pure, knowing that thy living touch is upon all my limbs. I think if we can always remember this, that His living touch is upon all our limbs, then we will always try to keep ourselves pure. And if we are pure, we will automatically become a channel of the Lord's love. And what else do we need? This morning, somebody sent me a beautiful parable. And it is the parable of two souls who are there inside their mother, yet to be born. And one of them is saying that what will happen to us once we go out of the womb of the mother? Our life will be all dark. We will not have life. And the other one is saying that who knows? Maybe we will have eyes, and maybe we will have legs, and maybe we will experience more. And the first one is saying, how can it be? No, we will not have this umbilical cord, so how will we be sustained? It is this that is giving us sustenance. And the other one is saying that, who knows, maybe there will be, the umbilical cord is actually short. Maybe we will have a very different way. They say there will be a mother. And this person says, mother? I can't believe this. Where is the mother? I only know this umbilical cord, and this is what is sustaining us. And I can't see what will our future be once we come out. It is very scary. The other person is saying, who knows? Maybe we are already inside the mother. Maybe the mother is there all around. Maybe we just don't know. And the first one says, I don't know, I cannot believe all this. And the other one then says, who knows? That is how probably it is going to be. Probably we are already in the mother, but we do not know that we are in her. Probably she is surrounding us, probably she is there with us all through, but we haven't just experienced that. And it is the same with all of us, isn't it? We are all the time there within. We are there in the mother all the time, but we fail to realize. It is the mother's love which is constantly protecting us, and it is the mother's love which will always keep us pure. It is the mother's love that the Central Trust is what it is today, and it is the mother's love that will always ensure that everything that has started will go on. We did a beautiful program on Mother Ishwaramma in the Sai Kulwant Hall on May 6th, 2015. When you have a few moments, if you have not watched this program, do watch this program on the Radio Sai website. Let us always never forget the mother. Let us always remember that there is no person on this earth who has loved and cared for the mother and has not had a peaceful life. With these thoughts, I take leave. Thank you so much for being with us, and do write to us as always by writing to listener@radiosai.org. On behalf of all of us at Radio Sai, we express our grateful thanks to each one of you for being with us and for your support and encouragement and inspiration. We offer ourselves at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.